deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la. Don we now our gay apparel, fa la 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 la.
Welcome back. This is the holiday edition of the Film Experience Podcast. This is Nathaniel, and I'm here with Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks, Joe Reed from The Wire, and Katie Rich from Vanity Fair.
All of us with London banking connections.
And I'm having tight perm put into my hair right now with little curlers.
And I'm wearing perfume that smells like garbage.
And I have to deal with this fire that I set with my science oven.
And you sunburned half of your face, too.
Yeah. Oh, God. Remember that? Oh, I had forgotten about that.
So we're here to talk about American Hustle, as you can tell, which Joe did not like, and which I really liked, and we were going to find out where Katie and Nick fall in the equation. We had a little recording snafu here, but Katie was said something really funny about watching American Hustle and feeling like a teacher who had a brilliant student who she just felt wasn't applying themselves.
But I don't think I'm quite as angry at it as Joe is.
I spend my whole week being able to say that. I'm a teacher. You didn't apply yourself. This draft is so messy. That's actually 6.5 days of my week. I'm probably right in the middle of them too, but maybe leaning a little bit more toward Nathaniel. I'm still trying to figure out whether, I mean, like, his whole thing is like being interested in improvisation and crazy groups of people doing crazy things, right? So It does sometimes seem sloppy, but I had some fun with this, especially every time Amy fucking Adams was on the screen.
I did not like the movie, but I adored her. I thought she was wonderful.
I mean, I think the whole cast is really strong. I mean, even to, like, all the tiny little supporting players. Like, I loved Elizabeth Rome.
Or Louis C.K.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
He was so good.
He was really good.
And Colleen Camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Colleen Camp.
Sags
Elizabeth Rome's hair was something else, honestly.
Yeah, Elizabeth Rome's hair, yeah. Pretty great.
Who was Colleen Camp?
The cat lady?
The cat lady at the
FBI. Oh.
Yeah. She, I learned, was one of the playmates in Apocalypse Now, which is crazy. What an amazing career. Digression, though.
Sometimes you're having sex in a helicopter in the mud, and you just don't know how much is going to come from that.
So, Nathaniel and Nick, I'm kind of curious, I feel like I've talked to Joe a lot about how the sloppiness drove us crazy, but I'm curious about you guys recognizing the sloppiness but going along with it anyway. Like, where does that work out for you?
I kind of feel like the characters are hot messes, right? And a really tight and sort of, you know, controlled directorial stance, I'm not sure it would have just... I think they would have really rubbed up against that in not a pleasant way.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that Nick and I have talked about this before. One of my favorite thing about David O. Russell is that he lets like actors sort of like jostle against each other in really odd ways that a lot of directors don't, who are constantly trying to control what you're seeing. So I like that it feels out of control. I mean, I wish structurally, maybe script-wise, it had a little bit more, because I couldn't quite figure out what was going on with the framing and the narration and things.
Yeah, that double, triple layered narration really, really frustrated me at times. Yeah. Where we not only get, very early on, we had gotten already Christian Bale narration and then Amy Adams narration, and then Christian Bale in his office alone talking aloud to himself, being like, I shouldn't have done that. I pushed it too far. Like, we get it. We saw it. We heard your narration of it. And now we're hearing you talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of just sort of haphazard. I felt like Nina Garcia just being like, edit, just edit yourself.
Maybe. But it could have been worse. It could have been Rush. Dear Diary, my father was mean to me.
Yeah, I can't believe that Joe got the Nina Garcia reference away from me. It's like,
I'm sorry, Nick. I had.
It's like an eye brought Michelle Pfeiffer into the conversation or something. It's so weird. I don't know. I from the first scene with the comb over, I felt like I knew I was going to be going back and forth with this movie all the time, because like those hairstyles and makeup jobs, which I do think are amazing, but are simultaneously pretty belabored, and the movie does sort of kind of call attention to them in plenty of ways that you don't need your first scene to be a kind of close-up center ring moment for the comb-over that none of us are going to fail to notice. So, like, there was a lot of, like, you know, from scene to scene, I think the directing doesn't always make great choices, but I did like that it wasn't, like, an outright farce about here are some really not very good con artists trying to pull off a huge con. Like I thought it would be... another director might have made this look like what I think the Monuments Men sort of looks like from here at this point, right? Like, hardy har har, we don't know how we're going to do this, but we're probably going to pull it off. Like, it's like, doesn't always serve itself by not being a little bit clearer about what's happening, or I think occasionally strands Amy Adams a little bit and sounding like she's doing a bad English accent instead of playing a character who wouldn't be very good at this, and yet these dupes are still all falling for it. Like, there are times that these could have been cleared up to the movie's advantage. And all
What was the point of having that scene at the beginning that ultimately comes up again at the end, when that's the main thing that it did for me, was make me sort of put me behind the eight ball with Amy Adams, like, wow, her accent's terrible, what's happening?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you only find out much later that you know what that's for, and it's a doubling up thing. Like, did we need that scene at the very beginning when we would get it later at the end? Maybe something different. Maybe, you know, if you're going to do a flashback scene, like, maybe just something slightly different. I don't know.
Yeah. But I do like that he makes these movies about people who are doing things that they don't even think 5 minutes before they're doing them they're going to do.
Yeah.
And like that, you know, and building relationships with each other that they themselves think are probably bad ideas. They're totally fun watches. And I like this one. I thought this one was more fun than Silver Linings Playbook, which is more outwardly fun. But I thought there was, like, a more interesting groove to get into with this one.
I want to echo the stranding thing you said about Amy Adams for Jennifer Lawrence, who we talked about on the Golden Globes podcast. Because I feel like her character, you keep coming back to her in her house where she lives in Long Island as Christian Bale's wife, and she has no function within the story for a really long time. Like, she's just kind of there. There are really long scenes with her, and she's got the science oven, and she's out there, and she's got this crazy hair. And then maybe, like, two-thirds of the way into the movie, she starts to get involved in the plot. But the plot is so incoherent, and I don't even think David O. Russell wants you to follow the plot. I don't think he cares. He changed the details of the true story so much. So she becomes really instrumental to the plot, but in a way that you don't understand. It's like she's doing all of this work in a role that the movie has kind of abandoned. And that really bugs me, because I feel like I kind of think that she's great, but I also think that the movie has nowhere to put her.
Yeah. I think it's funny to two times in a row kind of cast her as somebody who should be 10 years older.
Yes.
But at least this movie's about people who are kind of in shoes they have no idea how to walk in. Like, that kind of helped out a little bit more for me. But and I loved the whole, like, here's a bunch of David O. Russell veterans who are going to conspire and pull it over on somebody who's never been in one of his movies before. Like, there were a lot of, like, fun dynamics in it.
Yeah.
And I like Jeremy Renner, and I thought that I was sick to death of him because he's been everywhere and kind of unamusing in everything. But I think he did nicely here.
I liked him, but that character was another problem for me, where he's such an innocent lamb of a guy. And I know it's because in the story we have to feel very bad for him for being the victim in all this. But I feel like you can draw a politician who ultimately has the best interests of his community at heart, even though he does corrupt things, and still make him seem like a realistic person and not just this innocent child in a world of con artists. You know, it contributed to that sense where I just didn't believe any of it. It all just seemed like dress up for me, except for Amy Adams.
But isn't that sort of part of the whole theme? Like, I don't think you're supposed to buy it. You know, it's about people playing dress up.
Some baseline level that I didn't buy it beyond actors in costumes like that.
I liked how you compared it to Argo in that way in your review. About, like, we're all going to put something over that it really did happen, or else you wouldn't believe for a minute that this ever happened. But please notice our wide lapels while we do that. Like,
I mean, I get what you're saying, Nathaniel, about the sort of form and function of it being about poor con artists. So, but I feel like that doesn't write you a blank check to be completely, not credible to me. And that's how
I don't know. I don't think it was trying to be credible, though, is my point. Because it's even the text on screen, even at the beginning, asks you to laugh at it and not believe it.
Some of this actually happened, is that what it said? Yeah.
But if you're not supposed to believe anything, like, what are you supposed to care about?
I think that it's kind of like high old school arcane reference, but for me, it's kind of like the Judy and Mickey school of, like, let's put on a show, David O. Russell and his crazy friends.
Yeah. You
know? That's not what I want to watch, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's what I it felt like to me. It's just like, he's going to use the same actors. This time we're in costume. Like, it felt to me like an elaborate con job that was just about, you know, like, let's be crazy and have fun.
Well,
and
I certainly feel conned.
Ooh, burn!
It is kind of amazing, though, that I think Bradley Cooper and Amy Adams, for, you know, again, being backed by kind of between the two of you, like, I think managed to find ways to actually play people who I think are totally plausible and real without in any way departing from what David O. Russell wants to do, to, like, put people in a can and shake them around.
Yeah.
I thought Bradley Cooper was really good.
I did.
I did,
too. It's interesting how mileage varies. I feel like everyone comes out of this movie with a different MVP.
Yeah.
I like Amy Adams a lot, too, but I think Bradley Cooper was probably my favorite of the bunch.
I just love how vanity-free his performance was, because even though he, like, looks good other than, you know, the ridiculous hair, it's like the character is so desperate.
Yeah.
And so, like, and he so lets you watch the flop sweat, you know?
And to include when he's celebrating. That's an amazing scene.
Oh, that scene where he's celebrating.
Or celebrating fantastic. As total desperation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I'm really not, I don't want to give too much away, but the way that the story leaves him is really frustrating to me. I feel like it doesn't, it gets you rooting for him, and then it really drops him.
Yeah.
In a way that didn't seem fair. It makes me wonder what got cut out.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it does feel like roughly assembled. It does in many ways feel like a rough cut of a movie.
Yeah.
But for, at least for my mileage, I really, really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
I think that's
Joe
what
Joe will be about. Burning Prince.
No.
Or putting on an English accent and stealing it from theaters. And
exactly. I'll cut around all the non-Amy Adams parts and get rid of those and just put a reel together.
That will be the screening next summer is Joe's cut of American Hustle.
American Hustle redo.
I saw this movie called American Hustle and it had Brie Larson in like a halfway house. And it's so good.
Greta Gerwig was dancing in some scenes of it. It was
Marco Martel from Beautiful Creatures for some reason. I don't know.
Can I just say that I was really mad that I can't pronounce his name, but Saeed Taghmaoui?
Yeah.
That he had one scene. I thought he was going to be a major part.
Yeah.
And clearly, the other people thought he was going to be a major part of it too, the other actors.
Wait, who did he play?
He played the guy who was going to be playing the Sheik.
Oh, the guy in the Michael art gallery? Pena.
Yes.
Okay, before Michael Pena shows up.
I mean, because I love that actor. And, like, he's almost never in anything, but he was so great in Three Kings.
Yeah.
Another David O. Russell film. I just thought, oh, I was so happy he's back with David O. Russell, who understands how good he is, you know? And then he had one scene.
I was hoping Michael Pena would get to shake it up more, too, but...
I liked him, and I liked what he did. I thought he was good for...
I thought he was totally good at what he did. I just
he
thought
always
he was
is.
Hoping to become more crucial. But life is about disappointment. Which brings us to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also brings us to Amy Adams being my favorite thing in a movie.
Man, she's good in her.
Yeah, I really, really liked her in that. I thought that's... And that's a character that is just sort of built to... fade into the background, and she's just so, her scenes are just these oases of honesty. Not that the movie is itself isn't honest, but like there's a lot of Joaquin Phoenix's character sort of desperately trying to cling to things because they're so appealing to him, even though he knows on some level the levels of reality of it, and her scenes are just like cut through any kind of sort of romantic gauze, and I really, really love them. And she's wearing Cameron Diaz's wig from Being John Malkovich, so
the triangle very, of that wig is an underappreciated barometer of success.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
to be the best thing in a movie with that shit on your head is amazing.
And here's to recycling old movie props.
Yeah, for real.
Her wardrobe looks very comfortable. I realize it's not, you know, the most Olivia Wilde gets to actually dress attractively, but I don't know. I could handle a future in which I could just get to wear big baggy sweaters and menswear.
I cannot handle a future in which men are required to have their pants that high waisted, because most men would look really terrible in those pants, unless they were like the tiniest, thinnest men ever.
Well, if they have little tiny corsets woven into them, which is my personal hope, I'm all for it.
You are ready to embrace this.
We're just going straight back to Jane Austen while seeming like we're wearing khakis.
I rewatched this movie a couple days ago, and I really love this movie. And I worry that it's going to be loved by a bunch of like dumb white guys who have trouble connecting with people, and they'll be like, "This is a movie for me." And that,
Katie, will, why would you think that at all?
Because I'm watching it happen on Twitter as we speak.
It's just like Sideways, where everybody claimed that people only liked it because they related to Paul Giamatti.
Oh, maybe. I hope. I mean, I think that will probably happen with this, because any good movie can be ruined by its fans. But I really, I just think this movie is so thoughtful, and it's so, the story is so cannily constructed so that it subverts what you think it's going to be about all the time. And Scarlett Johansson, Joaquin Phoenix, despite not having actually worked together, have this really great portrait of relationship. And I think it's a really nice reflection on what it means to trust somebody and to be with someone and to give your life over to someone in like many different ways. It tackles that from so many different angles that I find it consistently interesting to re-engage with. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did anyone else find it? I'm afraid that I'm probably the person who liked it least, which makes me so sad.
But do you like it, but you don't love it?
I like it, but I don't love it.
We're together.
Oh, okay. Because like I wanted to love it so much in every scene, because I could see all the beautiful things it was doing. But to me, it just felt like it was belaboring its point so much, because it's so long for how slim the story is. Like, I just felt like I understood what it was doing really early on, and then it just kept doing that. So it's interesting that you're saying it works from so many different angles, because for me, I thought it was like the best short film I had ever seen, but 2 hours long.
I just feel like, you know, I would watch it and be like, oh, so it's going to be like him learning to share his life with a computer who knows everything. And then it just moves that past that really fast. And then it's going to be about the stigma of being in a relationship with a computer. And then it moves past that. And then,
yeah.
I don't know, it takes her character, especially in this direction that I did not see coming, and that I don't think you expect from the very slim outline of what the story is. That I liked that it took the time to really go into so many angles, and it keeps giving you questions to ask about how this future world works, and answers them in really interesting and unexpected ways.
Well, it reminded me a lot of being John Malkovich in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That in that the emotional stakes are not what you initially expect the emotional stakes are going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it has my favorite cameo of the whole year, and that I don't even want to say it on this podcast.
The voice only cameo?
The voice only cameo. I died. I thought that was so great. And it's a nod to a Spike Jonze thing, too.
Okay, I will edit this part out, but what are you talking about?
Brian Cox?
I've forgotten something, clearly.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kristen Wiig.
Oh, yeah, her too.
My God, I'm missing so much of this movie I just watched.
Yeah,
oh.
Brian Cox is the voice of when
the professor.
The professor, the sort of the third.
Physicist or whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
Wait, can we go back and explain to me who these people are? How did I miss all of this?
Okay, so Brian Cox, like in the end when they are in the cabin and she's talking to this guy who was a physicist and they've transferred his consciousness into an AI, and she's like, "Can I bring him into the conversation?" And then talks to him. That's Brian Cox.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and then Kristen Wiig is on the sex chat line in the very beginning with the "Strangle Me with the Dead Cat."
Oh, right. Okay. Right. That's when it lost the Oscar audience right there.
Although I saw it at a guild screening, just because, whatever, and they were totally in it the whole time. Like, and it was the audience you would stereotype as falling out of love with the movie for reasons like that, and maybe not even being able to use their computers. Like, I thought it was hilarious when Mark Harris said, "Do you remember last year when the Academy couldn't even figure out how to log on to vote, and now they're supposed to like this thing?" But yeah, people seem to really stick with it. I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens. But I agreed with Katie about how it manages to play so many angles of this scenario that I thought it wouldn't necessarily take up. But I wouldn't have put the trajectory of the Scarlett Johansson character in that group, because that did feel a little bit maybe too predetermined to me. And then maybe sometimes like there were things like I didn't necessarily want him to work for a greeting card company that writes fake cards, because we live in a technological... Like, I didn't... I'm glad the movie was had as many facets as it did, but maybe from aspect to aspect, I thought it was more or less successful at not being kind of literal. Mm-hmm. And the things I like the best in it are the things like, I don't know, I think all the actors are kind of really great at like boiling this scenario down to size where you feel like it's really happening, and I think the production design is good at doing that too, but mm-hmm. some of the writing conceits, I think, are a little too heavily on the nose.
Maybe. The production design is such unshowy futurism. That was maybe my favorite part of the
movie. Yeah, I mean, the world building is insane. Even complete with the video games, brilliant.
Yeah. They're so funny.
Like, at this point, K.K. Barrett is turning into a Emmanuel Lubezki of why doesn't he have 4 Oscars instead of zero.
Right,
exactly. Instead has 0 nominations. But you know, like, even though I thought the handling of divorce was actually really interesting in it, and I thought the scene at the outdoor restaurant was really well played on both of those actors' parts, I'm not sure that I needed a divorce to be so literal as the reason why somebody would fall in love with an operating system, especially because she's playing somebody you would fall in love with anyway. Mm. And so, I don't know. There were just some times where I thought the hammers of the movie were hitting a little hard on its own themes, but I did really like it. And I'm really curious to see it again.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it's like hovering how much I liked it, so I want to see it again before I make all my lists. Which brings us...
What do you think of Joaquin Phoenix specifically? Because that's an actor who you know is not my favorite, and I was fairly fond of him in this.
I feel like fairly fond of is as far as you can go. So I feel,
that's like giant praise for me.
Joe's pedal is to the metal in his Joaquin Phoenix.
I mean, I thought he was really good, but again, and I've thought he was genius before, so
yeah.
But I wouldn't take.
We're meeting in the middle, Nathaniel. Yeah. We're like Benjamin Button.
Yeah. You better do a ballet dance really fast.
We're Kate and Brad at their loveliest.
I think he's really good in it, and I think it's fun to see Joaquin Phoenix kind of like serve a movie in a sort of slightly self-effacing way instead of be cast to be the most interesting thing in the movie, which I think has happened to him a few times, and I think he kind of pulled it off on those occasions usually. But sometimes, you know, you like a movie because you think it shows a different side of an actor's potential that another movie might use even more interestingly, and I guess I sort of felt that way about this, but I thought he was really good in it.
The second time I watched it, I spent a lot of time watching his face in the scenes where Scarlett Johansson is talking, which is something I don't think really occurred to me because her performance is kind of really taking things over. And the work that he's doing of just sitting and reacting without doing too much sitting and reacting is really impressive. It's something that you don't have to do very often as an actor in a movie, but he does a really good job with.
Yeah. I did want to take that ukulele away from him. That would be another example.
Uh-huh.
And people really, really rejected the ukulele.
Oh, did they? Is it a trend?
I just remember I saw someone tweeting like, as soon as he pulled out the ukulele, I was like, nope.
There's such a stigma to the ukulele these days. Like,
I'm such a sucker for musical sequences in movies that I was all eating that shit up.
Yeah, me too.
Like, Frances Ha barely gets away with the ukulele. Like, I can't imagine anything
Well,
else.
And Frances Ha gives you the ukulele in, like, the first 30 seconds.
Right,
and
right.
I feel like multiple people are going to turn off that screener and be like, I can't do it.
it's our most stigmatized musical instrument right now.
I would say I did find the central premise very believable, though, because if an operating system could fix my whole life as well as she fixes his, I would probably be in love, too.
That moment where she just finds all the emails that he needs and deletes all the others.
I know.
Someone, please. I will marry anything that does that for me.
So, do we think Scarlett Johansson is getting the appropriate level of credit or maybe more credit than she deserves for being a character that is designed to make you fall in love with her?
That sounds like a slightly leading question.
No. I honestly, I mean that as open-endedly as possible because I ultimately don't know.
I think that that's the nature of many actress roles.
Uh-huh.
Especially when it comes to awarded ones, that it's about whether or not you fall in love with them.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked about this enough, but I have trouble, like, viewing vocal. I know Nick feels differently, but I have trouble viewing it as a full performance, even though I think she's really, really good in it. But also, I think she's the same good in Don John, and then I'm actually seeing her too, which is more exciting for me because I'm a visual person. I don't know.
I like her a lot better in her than I did in Don John. I think maybe part of that is I liked Don John as a movie quite a bit less, but I think she's funny in Don John. I think that the rest of it sort of loses me a little bit, but I think in her there was a point in which, again, I think it's the expectation thing where I was just sort of not expecting her to be as much of a subject in the movie because so much of like the actual conceit of it is that she is an object. But I ultimately was so invested in this character, this actual character that she was able to put together. And I think, and I think I'm probably more on Nick's side of the ledger when it comes to voice performances. I really think they can be. I think there's a degree of difficulty to it in that you're working with like one hand tied behind your back. But ultimately, when the ones that do sort of demand attention like this one does, I think it's fully. This is a full performance, even with just this one aspect.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I know too much. Maybe I should, maybe it would help if I didn't know as much as I knew about the production. Because it's also hard for me to sort of reconcile that she's getting so much credit for the chemistry, but it wasn't actually chemistry.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But
gutsy that they named her Samantha. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I know.
But I also wondered, because Amy Adams' character is named Amy, and I wondered if the Rooney Mara character was supposed to be Catherine Keener, who gets a thank you in the credits, and is at least somewhat closer to Joaquin Phoenix's age than Rooney Mara.
Oh, interesting.
I wouldn't have thought about that if it wasn't for the Samantha Morton thing, but
He actually was at the screening that I saw, and I think he said that a lot of those people in the credits are there because they always let him like do unofficial table reads and help him talk out his ideas, which he knows are crazy. It was such a nice tribute to having like a huge community of people, many but not all of whom we've seen him work with before.
Yeah, well, like Steven Soderbergh is thanking the credits, David O. Russell. Yeah. The thank you list in that is great. You kind of just want to go to that table read and watch all those people talk to each other.
The credits are incredible too, like how different characters are built. I love it.
Yeah.
I love the credits.
Yeah.
Can you guys bear with my ignorance for half a second and explain to me what the Samantha Morton situation was? Because I know all the extent of what I know is that she filmed the voice and that she was cut out.
And she was on set with Joaquin Phoenix doing the line readings.
What was the reasoning for removing her?
He's been pretty vague about it. He just said, like, in the edit, they realized it wasn't working. So,
I think the clearest account of it I heard was in the Mark Harris interview with him that I think was maybe in GQ, where he said that Samantha Morton really played somebody who was intellectually sort of understanding him. It was like a real like kind of listening voice for him to talk to, but maybe not somebody that you would fall head over heels in love with, which is what they realized they needed.
I see.
So maybe just as a bullion or something, which one can imagine from Samantha Morton. But
yeah,
it makes you wonder how often, if it were possible to sort of replace actors after the fact of filming, that would happen.
Oh man,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
this only happened because it could, and it just sort of it's funny.
Well, Woody Allen just refilmed the whole September again because he didn't think it was working.
Did he cut anybody out of that and replace them?
He replaced everybody.
He replaced everybody. That's funny.
Except Diane Weiss, because you can't do that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh.
You know, he understands some things, thank God.
Wait, actually, he didn't replace Mia either, right? So Mia and Diane stayed.
Not for a few more years. Zing! What was I going to say about her? I don't know. Sorry, cut that out.
I feel like we've gotten a good range of responses to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we want to wish you all happy holidays, and try to get caught up on movies before year's end.
We want Amy Adams to have an especially good holiday, because way to go, girl.
She's earned it.
She's the honorary star of this podcast.
That's right.
She's operating system.
She's the angel on top of all of our Christmas trees.
Aw, nice.
She's the science in our oven.
And I would totally play that video game she was playing.
And I would play the ukulele for her. I would let her play the ukulele for me, maybe more accurately.
Wow, even more so.
That's right.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Bye, everybody. See you in 2014 when the 2013 Oscars happen.
I'm as a corollary to the kale salad a couple weeks ago, I'm now going to a gingerbread house decorating party. So
yay.
I know. I have the
Keep
cutest
the Brooklyn
Sundays.
Thing happening.
I know. This is actually the Upper West Side, so it's like an hour-long subway.
Wow.
So, Joe, you may remember I came to your house last year holding a gingerbread house.
Remember that.
Yeah.
A gingerbread house and a stack of screeners. It was
I know. And this year there will not be any Santas.
That is a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, that's an operating system right there. I'd fall in that minute.
Well, anyway, you guys enjoy your Sundays.
Okay,
yeah, so cool.
All right, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. The fates allow. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow.